Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two, I'm Kyle Madsen, he's James Hamm. They are Jiffy Lube and they sponsor the show. We're hanging out with you until noon, then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and KC. Good news, James, my computer's working.
Oh?
Bad news, it was not working in time for me to start recording this hour.
Oh.
Good news, Jesse's going to help us out.
Okay.
Shout out to Jesse, the producer for D'Lo and Casey.
I don't have to...
You'll be uploading the podcast.
Oh, dang it.
Sorry, man.
Dang it.
Sorry.
Okay, so...
he's going to send me the audio.
Brennan Ayuk and Christian McCaffrey are back at practice on Tuesday. And then someone was saying that Trent Williams is off the side and will take part in individual drills.
Nice.
All right.
Reported that? My Twitter's not working, so I can't go look at any of this.
I'm trying to think. Where is this at? Oh, now mine's not working.
Great. Perfect. No, this is really good.
Spectacular. Spectacular.
This is cool. I love this for us.
Yeah, I think the initial report I read was from our friend Nick Wagner.
Great. Perfect.
Yeah.
I'm going to go check. I hope I can access his tweets right now. There we go. Nick Wagner, friend of the program. Back at practice today. Christian McCaffrey, Aaron Banks, Juwan Jennings, Tatum Bethune, the rookie linebacker from Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
Isaac Arendo working on the side. Did not see D. Winters or Yetur Gross-Matos.
Yeah, it's great to hear that McCaffrey is taking part.
Yeah, so that was one of the things that I was... always very confused on, because I got the idea, and then talking to people who are also around the team, I kept getting the idea that the McCaffrey calf injury and his absence from the preseason was more precautionary than anything.
Yeah.
Like, he strained his calf, and hey, they're just going to put him on ice until practices start for the regular season to make sure he's fully healthy and good to go, because they don't need to see anything out of Christian McCaffrey in training camp in the preseason, right? But I kept seeing, listening to NFL podcasts and fantasy football podcasts that are like, yo, hey, Christian McCaffrey could be in trouble week one. And if he's injured now and he's going to keep, and McCaffrey's back today for their bonus practice, and it looks like he's going to be good to go for week one, which I think was always the plan.
I think it was always a plan too. I
felt very alarmist.
I do understand that, like, if you're talking fantasy football, very specifically, I mean, it's a 17-week season. He's a guy with a long history of injury,
mm-hmm.
and it's a calf injury which can like take a long time to heal.
They can, yeah.
And so I think a lot of talk was about, you know, make sure that if you're going to draft McCaffrey, or if you're getting deep into a draft, make sure you take Mason.
Mm-hmm. Like Jordan Mason.
Yeah, Jordan Mason. Make sure you have his backup. Yeah, we also have from Nick Wagner, Trent Williams was not on the practice field during very brief open portion of practice. Obviously needs to get rework contract finished before he participates. Would think Thursday is more likely target.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me. My guess is Trent Williams is playing week one. I think that he believes he needs 3 days to get ready. He'll practice for 3 days and be on the field against the Jets.
Could you imagine thinking to yourself, I need 3 days and I can be ready to start an NFL game?
No.
No, never.
No, I can't.
No. No, I mean, I can't either. Like, the thought of that, like, oh, I can just turn this thing on and go.
Crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that's wild. That's wild.
When you're a Hall of Famer and you're playing at a high level at age 36 and you're 15, like, sure, man, as long as he's on the field.
He's done all the work.
No, I will. Look, here's the thing. I think all these guys playing, Christian McCaffrey coming back, Brandon Ayuk coming back, Trent Williams coming back, I think it gives the Niners a lot better chance to beat the Jets in week one. If Trent Williams wasn't playing, I didn't think they were winning. But hey, if he's going to be back, but there's a very real scenario here that we've seen play out when Deebo Samuel held in-ish,
mm-hmm.
When Brandon, not Brandon Ayuk, but when Nick Bosa last year, we saw them get off to kind of these slow starts and have these up and down years. There's a very real chance that Trent Williams gets on the field in week one And man, you know what? He gave up two sacks and he gave up a tackle for loss on a big third and one play where they ran behind him and he missed his block. Like, all of that stuff's on the table. We already talked about Brandon Ayuk. Yeah, week one, he had 3 catches on 6 targets for 28 yards and just was overall not effective. Like, there's definitely still a chance. Well, I think things are falling into place for the Niners right now.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things that when we talked 3 weeks ago and we said, hey, are the vibes bad right now? Hey, it's Christian McCaffrey and it's Brandon Ayuk and it's Trent Williams and man, they lost a preseason game. Like, the vibes just down. They're canceling joint practices because everybody's hurt. Is this going to be a problem? But hey, going into week one, you get Christian McCaffrey back, you get Brandon Ayuk back, Trent Williams back. Okay, things are kind of falling into place, and that's nice. That's nice that these things that have cast this pall over the 49ers entire offseason are now taken care of, and they're good to go, and they're locking in for week one. But at the same time, it's very much on the table that, you know what, yeah, they're there and they're locked in, but hey, Christian McCaffrey was needed a little ramp up, and Trent Williams needed 3 weeks to be back at his peak performance, and Brandon Ayuk didn't have a 100-yard game until week 14. There's this stuff is maybe this is the pessimist in me, but while this is all great that this is all falling into place the Tuesday before the regular season, there's still a very real chance that these holdouts, hold-ins, and injuries wind up affecting the 49ers once the season starts.
Oh, yeah, especially week one.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not playing, it's not a cupcake schedule. No. You start the season with one of the best defensive teams in the league.
Yep.
And I think with a quarterback that's motivated to show that he's not over the hill and washed in Aaron Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, this is going to be a good game. This is a team with what many think, like, fantasy-wise, is, like, number one, number two running back in the league in Breece Hall.
Yep.
I mean, this is a team with like Garrett Wilson, a very, very
really good
wide receiver. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got very nice specialty players all up and down. This is a dangerous, dangerous team, and it's a team with with a head coach that everyone knows.
It's
a former defensive coordinator for the 49ers. This is a motivated team,
coaching for his job.
Yeah, all season,
all season,
first six weeks.
So look, here's you mentioned the schedule. They have New York on Monday. And I wrote about this at NinersWire.com. Check it out. I wrote about how, hey, you know what? It's actually good they get this Monday game because it extends out time to get guys healthy. It extends out time to get Trent Williams back in the building. That's all great that they play Monday. But then their quick turnaround to a 10 a.m. start Sunday at Minnesota. Then they fly back home and they play the Rams in L.A. the next week. I'm of the mind the Rams are going to be good this year. They get the Patriots, who might be the worst team in the league. They get them at home. They get Arizona at home, division game. Always play the Niners tough.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're at Seattle on a short week. Then they're home against Kansas City, with Kansas City coming off their bye. They're home against Dallas the next week. Then they get a bye. Then they're at Tampa Bay, home Seattle, at Green Bay, at Buffalo for Sunday Night Football. Then they come home to play Chicago. Then they're home L.A. on a Thursday, so they have that Rams game on a short week. Then they go to Miami on December 22nd. Then they come home and play the Lions on Monday Night Football before wrapping up their schedule on January 5th at Arizona on a Sunday.
That's not a lightweight schedule.
That's a brutal schedule, dude.
Yeah.
If Arizona is even a little bit good, which I think they will be, I'm pretty high on Arizona this year.
Okay.
I'm also pretty high on the Rams. I don't think Arizona's going to go like 12-5 or anything crazy like that. I just don't think they're going to be easy to beat.
Okay.
Like you're probably looking at like 7-10, 8-9 for them. And I think they're going to be a tough beat. I think the Rams are going to be good. I've said on this show, if I'm betting, I would pick the Rams to win the division. And then Seattle is just, that's going to be Seattle. They have a new head coach. I'm interested to see what they look like. Maybe they're terrible. I don't know. But I'm always going to project out that Seattle's going to be pretty good until I see otherwise.
Yeah.
So, I just, man, you get your own division, which might be one of the best two divisions in football. And then Kansas City, Dallas, at Buffalo. That's a gauntlet that starts with this Monday night game against New York and then the short turnaround at Minnesota. Like, man, that just, and you're trying to ramp guys up. There's just not really a good stretch of games where you're feeling, okay, yeah, they're going to, a lock in 5-0, lock in 4-1.
Yeah. I'm not a huge...
Can't get there.
Like, I don't like where Minnesota's at as a team right now.
Sure, 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 sure.
So that's one where it's like, okay.
That's more the spot than the opponent.
Yeah,
sure.
You don't want to lose because of the spot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's always like a concern, like,
yeah,
for sure. But at the same time, that's not a game that I'm circling and going, hey.
No, it's no. That's the one of the latter games on their schedule, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that week 4 against New England, that's not horrible.
No.
I want to see what the Cardinals and the Seahawks look like. So I could see the first 6 weeks of the season. I don't know, 4-2. I don't know.
4-2.
The first 6 weeks? Maybe 5-1.
Hmm.
No?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I just I don't know, man. Here's where my hang up is. I thought because they started slow in 21, they started slow in 22. Mm-hmm. And okay, maybe that's just this team. And I thought last year, man, they got to go to Pittsburgh week 1. It's Mike Tomlin. Pittsburgh's offense was awesome in the preseason. I was pretty bullish on Pittsburgh, and they ended up not being very good, and the Niners smoked them. And the Niners got out to a super fast start and were the number one seed in a year where I thought, man, I think they're going to struggle. So I look at this and I go, man, I would take 4-2 the first 2 weeks and feel great about it.
Yep.
But maybe they'll go 5-1. Maybe they're going to be awesome and they'll be 6-0.
Yeah.
But I think you start stacking up the Super Bowl hangover aspect of this. You start stacking up Trent Williams getting in late, Brandon Ayuk getting in late, Christian McCaffrey getting in late after suffering a calf injury.
Mm-hmm.
You're starting at least one new player, two new players in your secondary, and possibly three depending on Talanoa Hufanga. You're starting a new linebacker in Dre Greenlaw's spot next to Fred Warner. You have zero depth at defensive end. These are all the things that when somebody wants to be super bullish on the 49ers, they want to be like, yes, they're going to go 5-1, 6-0 those first 6 weeks. I'm looking at a 13-4 schedule right here. Maybe. They on paper, they have the talent to be that good.
Yeah.
They have the talent to steamroll their way to a number one seed, no doubt. But when you start stacking up potential adversity, it's like, man, that's a lot to overcome. And I think you're going to see it in week 1 against the Jets. I don't think that's going to be an easy game whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. I want to see how they come out. Like, who are you? Like, what do you look like from the jump? Are you a team that is serious about this season, or are you a team that has really got lost in the weeds all the way through preseason?
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, like, can you come out and, like, hit your stride early in the season, or is this going to be a ramp up? And if it's a ramp up, the second half of the schedule, to me, is where it really gets difficult. You got those two games with Kansas City and the Cowboys, but, I could at Green Bay, at Buffalo... The Bears are going to be much improved. That at Miami, and then against Detroit near the end of the season, again, that could be two losses. So what you don't want to do is go 5-3 to open the season, and next thing you know, you're looking at maybe 11-5.
Mm-hmm.
That's or 11-6.
Yeah, if you start slow and you're 4-4 going into your bye week in week 9.
Oh no!
To make the playoffs, assuming 10-7, you got to go 6-3.
Mm.
And you're at Tampa Bay, home Seattle, at Green Bay, at Buffalo, home Chicago, home Rams, at Miami, home Detroit, at Arizona. You got 6-3 in those 9 games.
Mm.
They can. I'm sure there's, I don't have the chat up because I'm looking, but I'm sure there's people in the chat right now, like, that's easy work.
Yeah.
And sure, like, maybe. I'm not saying they can't go on that kind of run, or that they can't start faster, that they can't go 13-4. They 100% can. But when I start, you know, the relief of, oh man, the Brandon Ayuk thing's done and the Trent Williams thing is done. Oh man, and Christian McCaffrey's coming back, and you see all these guys getting healthy. Okay, feel really good about feel good. It's like, I don't know if I feel good. I feel better.
Yeah,
feel better than I did last week. But you start again factoring in the Super Bowl hangover of this, and you start factoring in the schedule. I just maybe it's just me. Maybe it's a me problem.
It's tough, man. I don't know what it's going to look like. I'm excited to see it, though. because this is still a great team.
It should be. I'll tell you what.
Well assembled.
I'll tell you what. This is, I think for this specific group, I think this is the end of their Super Bowl window. For this specific group.
Okay.
And I say that because I think you're going to see some changes this offseason to the core group of players. Where maybe Deebo Samuel's gone. Maybe George Kittle's gone. Maybe it's Charvarius Ward and Deometer Lenore are both out the door. Maybe Dre Greenlaw winds up leaving in free agency. Maybe it's Aaron Banks. Maybe he's gone. Like there's all these players who have been kind of part of this team for the last 2, 3, 4 years who could be out of here in the offseason. And if they come out this year and they go 12-5 and they play the Chiefs tough, maybe they lose to the Chiefs and play them tough and they go into Buffalo and they beat Buffalo and they beat Detroit again. And you just like, man, this is once again just the best team in the NFC. They had a couple of hiccups there, but 12-5, this is a really, really good team. Then I'd feel better about their Super Bowl window extending into whatever is the next version of the 49ers.
Mm-hmm.
But man, you come out this year and you go 4-4 to start and you finish the year like 9-8. It'd be really tough to be optimistic about the next 5.
Yeah. That's where it's going to get tough. And that's where you have to make difficult decisions.
Yeah, like, man.
How do you, like, that's like you're going to put a whole bunch of money into a quarterback. Like, where are you going? Like, that's where you're looking at, like, the grand scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
What does your team look like? Mm-hmm. Right? How do you build this thing out? It's going to be tough.
Well, and that's Tom Pelissero from NFL Media tweeted today, like, hey, if anybody's wondering how the Niners are getting all these deals done, it's perks of having a quarterback making $1 million.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's part of it for sure. But it's partly because they've kicked money down the road and some of these players are going to still cost them money into like 2028 and 2029 when they're not on the team anymore.
Yeah.
That's part of the way they've done it. But the other way they've been able to do it is be signing only really, really high-end players, right? They only go spend big on their own guys when they don't go give Mike McGlinchey a top of market deal.
Mm-hmm.
They don't pay to keep Laken Tomlinson around at left guard. Like they don't pay for guys like that.
Yep.
They're not going to pay Talanoa Hufanga. They haven't had to pay. Travarius Ward is making decent money, but he's not like top of market. You know, they're allocating their money in the right places. But once you give Brock Purdy, once you commit that $60+ million a year to Brock Purdy,
mm-hmm.
It dramatically alters the way you can build your team, which in turn, when we're talking Super Bowl window, affects the Super Bowl window. But it also now puts the onus on the front office to, hey, you're going to lose Deebo Samuel, but you're going to have to replace him. You're not going to find a Deebo Samuel replacement directly, I don't think. But you got to find another good receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, George Kittle is 34 and no longer effective. You got to find a way to replace him. You're churning through safeties every 4 years because you can't sign one long term because it's too expensive, but you got to keep finding capable players there.
Yep.
Like this is going to shift where, okay, the window might be there because you still have some of these really good vets, Fred Warner, Nick Bosa, Brandon Ayuk. Those guys are going to be around. But in 3, 4 years, when it's Brock Purdy and Brandon Ayuk, and that's kind of it for guys under 30, that's when this is going to get really tough. But again, that's 4 years from now.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I also, like, how much should they save this season and moving forward? Like the Ayuk deal, like, you're going to have to pay him eventually, but his cap number for this year is way low.
Yeah. It's like less than $6 million, I think.
I think his cap figure is like $1 million, but then his signing bonuses and stuff like that's a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I'm looking right now, their cap space is at $49.5 million
mm-hmm.
in cap space right now. They're the team with the second highest cap space.
Go look at 2025.
Is it just like hideous?
It's a disaster.
Yeah.
It's such a mess in 2025, and that doesn't even factor in whatever Trent Williams' contract is going to look like, and then whatever Brock Purdy's contract is going to look like.
$40 million over right now in the red for next for next year.
Oof.
But can't you carry over that $50 million from this year?
Yes, it rolls over, but that doesn't mean they suddenly have $10 million in space.
Okay.
Yeah, they've done an okay job managing the cap for sure. But it's just when you start spending $60 million on one player instead of less than a million, like that just fundamentally changes the way you can build your team. But that's why this year matters so much.
Yeah.
Hey, there's all this adversity with Trent Williams and Brandon Ayuk and Talanoa Hufanga may or may not be in the lineup week one. And what's Christian McCaffrey up to? How's his calf doing? It's like, yo, you're about to pay Brock Purdy to overcome all of this.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I'm watching for this year. Is I think they're going to run into some injury adversity. They didn't have a ton last year, so I'm going to factor in some of that. And can Brock Purdy be that dude who kind of overcomes what everybody says about him? Says, hey, yeah, he's really good in this system with these specific players, but yeah, hey, if Brandon Ayuk gets off to a slow start, can Purdy lean on Deebo Samuel? Can he lean on Juwan Jennings? Can he continue to find ways to make plays down the field if Brandon Ayuk's struggling a little bit out the gate? If Trent Williams misses some time, can Brock Purdy figure out a way to be efficient and not turn the ball over when Trent Williams is not in the lineup? Going to be a big deal. Deebo Samuel misses time. Can they lean on Juwan Jennings? Can he lean on Brandon Ayuk? Can he help elevate the players around him if they hit some adversity? Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to hit some this year, and that's going to be spotlight on number 13. And I think all of it is going to come down to him.
I think he's going to be really good. I'm like, he's... What
so
he
do the
looked
49ers.
Like, what he looked like last year, and then I just feel like he's one of those guys. And like the comparison that I always make with him, he reminds me a lot of Drew Brees. He's mm-hmm. just like relaxed in the pocket. He just mm-hmm. knows how to manage the game, but not a game manager.
Mm-hmm.
Like and like I think there's an ability here for him to push 4,500, 5,000 yards, like in the heart of his career. Like mm-hmm. not this year. I mean, I think he can hit 4,500 yards this year because he finished last year with, 43 and sat out the last game.
Mm-hmm.
So there's potential there for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's just one of those guys that gets it and brings like a calming influence to a
yeah.
team. And I think he's going to be picking defenses apart for the next, 15 years.
We're going to learn. I think this is the year. This is the tipping point year for him for me where... Maybe he is the rising tide that lifts all boats. But last year, a lot of things just kind of went the Niners' way.
Mm-hmm.
And then went to the Super Bowl in part because the Lions receivers dropped passes. And because they had a cornerback had a ball bounce off his face mask and Brandon Ayuk made a miraculous catch. Like, they had a lot of things break their way in that NFC title game to even go to a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at number 13 this year, man. Like, this to me has got to be the year that he shows, hey, without a doubt, this is a top 10 to 12 quarterback in the league, regardless of situation. Because I think the situation's going to warrant him being more of a playmaker than he needed to be last year.
Yeah. Well, hey, look.
Learn a lot.
We are going to learn a lot, but I have some faith in what's happening here.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Kinda.
Sort of.
We'll see. we gotta hit a break. That's James. I'm Kyle. Jiffy Lube's the sponsor. The Kings had a kind of I'll explain here in a second, but they had a boring offseason a little bit in kind of the best way.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about this ongoing shift that we've seen for the Kings. He's James. I'm Kyle. We're the insiders on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
I think Justin Herbert is the quarterback I'm most torn on in the NFL.
Really?
Yeah. Because I'm out on him at the moment. But I don't... Here, this is the way I can explain it. I'm not out on Justin Herbert, the person/quarterback. I'm out on the analysts who have just decided that he's a top five guy already.
Yeah.
His skill set is crazy. He's mobile. He has one of the strongest arms in the league. He will make some of the sickest throws that you'll see in a season. But there's just more to it for me than just, wow, man run fast and throw ball far.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit what a lot of the oh my God, Justin Herbert's amazing. He's so good. Look at, imagine how good Team X would be with Justin Herbert instead of, like, maybe, yeah. maybe. But what is, I've seen people say that the Dolphins would be better with Justin Herbert instead of Tua. And that might be true. That maybe.
Yeah.
And this is my gripe with Justin Herbert. Again, it's not Justin Herbert because I see the vision. I see, man, a version of the Dolphins offense with a guy with Justin Herbert's pure skill set. Yeah, that might be crazy. But what if he doesn't run it as effectively as Tua does? And maybe he makes a couple of mind-blowing spectacular throws and holy crap, he's throwing the ball deep to Tyreek Hill and everybody watch out. But I just, he hasn't done enough for me yet. He's put up the numbers and he's, but like, dude, at some point you got to win a little bit.
Yeah.
And I've said this before, if you're going to be a guy who's, oh, he's top five and he's this good and you're supposed to be able to overcome all this stuff, not having all these advantages that Brock Purdy has, if you can't do that, then I can't get there yet. Like I said, I see the vision and maybe Jim Harbaugh's the guy to get him over that hump. And we see Justin Herbert by the end of this year, consensus top three dude. It's Mahomes, it's Josh Allen, it's Justin Herbert. Sure. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say I'm not out on Justin Herbert because I think that's still on the table. But I got to know what's happened in his career that makes anybody think that Justin Herbert is already that dude.
I think it's almost like he did himself a disservice in his second season in the league. He threw for 5,000 yards. He threw for 38 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Like, he was incredible. But they go 9-8. The next season, right. They went 10-7. His stats weren't, and he wasn't nearly as good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 4,700 yards, but 25 touchdowns, 10 picks. Like, his...
So,
it feels like he is one of those guys. But I always kind of feel the same with Burrow. Like, yeah, he's good.
Mm-hmm.
But is he great? Is he top three? Everyone just throws him in top three. Mm-hmm. And I want to see what Josh Allen looks like this year.
Mm-hmm.
Without any of his wide receivers. They did the same thing with Herbert. Herbert has none of it. Like, they just went out and traded everybody.
It's
like,
crazy.
Yeah, like, see ya, Keenan Allen. We're not going to pay you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what, Mike Williams?
Mike Williams.
Like, everyone's out the door.
It's Josh Palmer and Ladd McConkey.
Yeah, and no more Austin Eckler out of the backfield. Mm-hmm. Like, you just wiped out, like, his safety blanket. So mm-hmm. let's see what he looks like. But, you know, that's not a good position to be in, like, starting fresh. And I feel the same with Josh Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Allen's going into the season. Yeah, you got your tight end. Your mm-hmm. running back was good last year. Not mm-hmm. great, but good. But your wide receivers are now gone. There mm-hmm. is no more Diggs. There is, you know, they're just, all of them are gone. We're starting over.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to see if they can do, like, I think last year we watched, like, the greatest quarterback that we've seen in a long time mm-hmm. outside of, you know, Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
Like, lead his team to the Super Bowl with like, no wide receivers.
Yeah.
And you could tell they realized it because that's not what they're doing this year.
Yep.
They went out and
major moves.
Brought in major pieces to help him. It's like, mm-hmm. hey, look, you brought in actual NFL wide receivers. Yeah. You know, they might not be the best of the best, but I'll take a, like, Juju, mm-hmm. Schuster-Smith, and I'll take Hollywood Brown. Like, give me some, and some young guys that have mm-hmm. some talent. Okay.
Yeah.
He can build this, and he had a year of working with Rashee Rice, and so maybe he can put something yeah. together, but I don't know that there's another quarterback in the NFL that could have walked into last season and done anything close to what Patrick Mahomes did with the same exact skill set, and that's what it feels like they're doing with Herbert. It feels like they're doing with Josh Allen. Like, well, like, Mahomes did it. He got through. You guys figure it out. Figure out how to make these wide receivers great.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, man. If that's really what teams are doing, and I want to get to the Kings here in a second, but if that's what teams are doing, if that's legitimately the Chargers and Bills said, hey, we have a Mahomes type of guy, so we'll just cut it short at receiver, they are horribly mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where I can't be out on Justin Herbert, because their defense has been abominable. Their I'm not sure their offense has been conducive to him and his skill set. His average depth of target is always super low, which doesn't make sense for a player with his skill set. Maybe it's the offense, and again, maybe it's him, I don't know. But that's why I'm excited to see with Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman in there if they can help him expand that and become the quarterback that kind of takes that major leap.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, you throw for 5,000 yards and 38 touchdowns in a season, you're not bad. He's obviously not a bad player. But is he going to be that guy that, that eventually gets over the hump and wins Super Bowls or a Super Bowl? I think if the Bills and Chargers think they can just replicate what the Chiefs did, they are sorely mistaken.
Oh,
the Chiefs have,
yeah,
A, a generational quarterback, B, the best receiving tight end of all time, the best head coach doing it right now, maybe the best defensive coordinator doing it right now, and they had a loaded defense last year. Like they their formula was not Patrick Mahomes and offense driven.
No.
No. He made plays in the Super Bowl for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to go run it back with Mecole Hardman midseason, and it was a mess. And you see they're not trying to do it again.
No.
It was not on purpose.
No, it's funny too. Sure. Someone mentioned that I can't remember who it was in the chat that Herbert needs to show that he's better than Trevor Lawrence. Man, I got to be honest, Trevor Lawrence, like he's done a lot more than Trevor Lawrence. Like,
see, and that's okay, and that's where I run afoul of the rest of this station when it comes to Trevor Lawrence. I think Trevor Lawrence is freaking awesome.
Yeah.
There is a video that goes viral on Twitter once a week. It's like 6 minutes. It is 6 minutes of Jaguars pass catchers dropping touchdowns last year.
Yeah.
Like that. So. It was a major problem. And he had a bunch of interceptions where we're bouncing into guys' hands and then to defenders. It was just the Jags have not put him in a good position. But I think I'm in the same spot with Trevor Lawrence that I am with Justin Herbert, where like I'm not ready to crown them yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, at some point you got to produce. Like at some point you've got to do it, and you got to go win playoff games.
Yeah.
Regardless, like it's a must. Like that's the whole point. And if you're not winning playoff games, like I'm sorry, I can't get behind the idea of, oh well, if you just put Trevor Lawrence with the Niners, then they're going to win the Super Bowl every year, like possibly. But I don't. I gotta see this dude make a deep run first.
Yeah, I have a tough time believing that.
Like, yeah.
Again, he's got to prove he's more than Derek Carr at this point, like as a player. And I mean, unfortunately, I mean, when you throughout your career, you got 58 touchdowns and 39 interceptions.
Like I said earlier, there's stuff that I'm not putting on Herbert, and that's stuff I'm not going to put on Trevor Lawrence either.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is Herbert showed it, like his stats were just so incredible.
Yeah,
early on, and he mm-hmm. did go 10 and 7.
And he's played through a bunch of injuries. Like he's been. Yeah. He's dealt with a ton of adversity in his career, for sure. And that's why I can't be out.
But there's too many times where he's in a big moment and does something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And again, talk about like a
smoking,
Derek Carr.
What was it, a 24-point lead in the playoffs?
Yeah. Like he's made some Derek Carr throws where you're like, oh, man.
It's tough.
All you had to do is not do that and you would have won.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tough stuff.
Let's talk some Kings real quick before we get out of here. We got the handoff coming up in about 5 minutes. Real quick, salute to TJ McConnell and the Pacers. T.J. McConnell, 4 years, $45 million. He agreed to that contract with Indiana. That's such a quality signing. Getting T.J. McConnell for $11.25 million a year,
mm-hmm.
that's well done by the Pacers. Good for them.
He busts up the Kings every single time.
I feel like he busts up every team, dude.
Yeah, the whole time you're wondering why he doesn't play more. And then, like, that's that team, the way that they've built themselves, like... They get some gritty dudes.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those guys that just, like, really, he brings it. But then they also have Nembhard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got, like, that's another guy that very mm-hmm. similar, like, just a tough guy to defend. And I'm intrigued to see how that team grows.
This is some good news for the Kings. And this ties into something I've thought about for a while. Because, again, you have to remember my journey in Sacramento media. I started in August of 2011, mm-hmm. I started interning at a sports talk radio station. And the conversation about the Kings was exactly the same that offseason as it was when I started doing a morning show out here in 2018. Like, it never changed. Save for the Here We Stay movement and all that. That was incredible. That's part of the reason I fell in love with the city. But outside of that, from the on-court basketball perspective, it was like every year was the same exact conversation. And every year it felt like a mess.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing this show now for two NBA off seasons. And it's just been normal.
No drama.
It's been super regular.
Mint.
It's not been, don't get it twisted. It's not been perfect. There are things I think the Kings could have done differently last year and this year. But again, it's normal, like, gripes with team building. It's the same kind of gripes I have with the 49ers and their team building. Like, yeah, they did a lot. Are there things I would have done? Yeah, maybe. But overall, like, it's just normal.
Yeah.
It's so nice. It's been wonderful.
I agree. Like, my first year covering the team,
mm-hmm.
we knew in the first, at the final preseason game, like, Gavin Malouf hung out in the media room watching the preseason, like, media
mm-hmm.
in the press conference room. And he didn't get up and scurry out. And as soon as we got up, we started asking him because there was, I think it was a convergence plan was failing
mm-hmm.
right then. We knew, like, that day, the day before, it was failing. And so we started asking him. And right away, he let it slip that they would consider all options. And it was like, oh, this thing is on. My first preseason, I didn't even know if I was going to be allowed in the game, into a game with a media credential. And that was one of my first acts as a reporter. And the next thing you know, I'm in full-blown relocation mode. Full-blown.
Welcome to the beat!
Relocation, where you're going to, Tuesday night, you got city council meeting. Wednesday night, you got a Kings game. Thursday night, you got another city council meeting. Friday, you got another Kings game. Like, every day. It was so wild
Insane.
And outlandish. Then, you know, we get fast forward a couple of years and you got a full relocation attempt again. You had the stupid one in between where they tried to go to, like, Virginia Beach.
Yeah.
So they tried to do that and it was like, what is happening? And then, like, on top of that, the Cousins situation and constant coaching firings and, like, it was so wild and chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. It is kind of. This is the first time I've taken like a mental break where I don't feel forced to write every single day and I don't feel forced to write like, you know, seven things a month during the off season. It feels calm. And yeah. I think that's something like hat tip to Monty McNair, because this era of Kings basketball, it does feel different.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it's not chaos. It's not, like, do they get things done? Are they mentioned in way too many trades? Yeah.
Sure.
And do you have your big man at his camp say, yeah, things kept falling through.
Mm-hmm.
Just really excited to get to Mar DeRozan because, you know, things kept falling through.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, I wonder what those things were. We know part of what they were. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that's refreshing as opposed to just flat out chaos.
It's refreshing as opposed to... Sabonis doesn't have a new contract and now he's asking out and this draft pick is terrible and this free agent is already doesn't want to be here and is looking for a way. Like, it's just, it has been so, so great to just be able to have a normal couple off seasons where the conversation's different. And it's about, hey, you know what? Hey, they look like, man, this is a playoff team. 50, 55 games. Things kind of go right. Like, this is exciting. And part of it is ESPN did their continuity rankings, and they did this based on the percentage of minutes you have returning and percentage of wins above replacement that you have returning.
Yeah.
The Houston Rockets are number one. They're returning 75.7% of their minutes and 94.4% of their wins above replacement. The Kings, seventh, returning 65% of their minutes... and 90.5% of their wins above replacement. And I think that speaks to and is part of the reason that, yeah, hey, it's just kind of been normal. That's what a team that is building and moving the right direction does. You're returning most of your minutes, you're returning all of your best players, and everything's kind of moving the right way.
Well, that and you're returning your coach. Like, again, I've said this before, but...
Damian Barling here for the handoff, everybody.
Hello, Dame.
That is me.
We're talking about how normal the Kings are now. Go on, James.
So, like, Mike Brown is the ninth head coach I've covered going into my 15th season. He is the first head coach to get a second contract.
Crazy.
I mean, that's the continuity thing. It matters. And mm-hmm. this is the first time they've embraced that idea, continuity.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The Kings ranked 7th in ESPN's continuity rankings, where they took a percentage of your returning minutes and a percentage of your returning wins above replacement.
Okay. I've never heard of continuity rankings
before.
Yeah,
it's just a...
I guess that's fun. Who's
they're just
first?
Making things up.
Houston is first.
Okay.
75.7% of their minutes and 94.4% of their wins above replacement.
Interesting.
Second
okay.
is the Magic.
Okay.
Boston
okay,
number 3.
I get it. Yeah, okay.
The Lakers number 5, tied with the Cavs. And this is where that's not always a good thing. Because we're talking about the Kings being like... Because when I started in Sacramento, it was August of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So summer of 2011. And then when I started doing a morning show in 2018, the conversation was just the same. It was the same Kings every year.
Mm-hmm.
It was always kind of a mess.
Yeah.
And now we were just talking and like, man, this is great that they're just kind of a normal team now.
Yeah.
And I think
it's awesome.
Yeah, it's so nice.
Yeah. No, not being a disaster is terrific.
But I think part of it is because of this and what James just said. They bought into this idea of continuity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always a good thing because the Lakers are 5th. They're returning 94.8% of their wins above replacement. But that's not necessarily great when most of your wins above replacement are 2 guys and you were the 8 seed last year.
There's probably continuity by choice.
Yeah.
And continuity by no other choice.
that's exactly probably, it.
It kind of feels exactly like the Kings were, they wanted DeMar. Maybe they were going to take a bigger mm-hmm. swing at Lauri Markkanen or whatever. But mm-hmm. like they were kind of bought in on the group that they had. The Lakers, on the other hand, probably didn't really have a choice.
Yeah.
I'm sure Houston is in on their group.
Mm-hmm.
Orlando's definitely in on their group. Obviously, Boston.
Yeah, I think they feel good about where they're
at.
We're
only missing one. Who's 4?
Oklahoma City.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, so no. The Lakers are the outlier in that group.
Yeah, because
Cleveland's
next.
Outlier. And some people like Cleveland more than others. Jesse hates Cleveland. But...
That tracks.
I'm in on the Cavs again. I could see them.
I think they're all right.
You know, fighting with the Knicks and that group up there for yeah. Not for Boston, not for one, but for 2, 3, 4, something like that.
Yeah, they're fun. I even if they were to take a bigger jump and you saw someone else take like a step back just because they're not worried about the regular season, I could see them finishing number 2. But I would think it would be one of those number 2s. It's not going to go mm-hmm. like you're not going to get bounced in the first round, but you might mm-hmm. get bounced in the second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so.
Yeah, we'll see. Cleveland's got a lot of work to do. That's
yeah,
for
they
sure.
do. Yeah,
that's
they got to figure sure. out. They've like committed to a path. And now they got to figure out how to make that work.
Well, they did make a switch. Like they changed head coaches.
They
so
did.
That's
yeah,
a,
yeah.
That's
but with
a,
their but with their roster,
deal.
They didn't
yeah.
trade anybody.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
I think it's interesting to look at continuity that way, like the way that they're looking at this and breaking it down with mm-hmm. like win shares, and minutes played and all that stuff.
It's
and,
an
well,
interesting
to,
conversation. For
yeah,
sure.
I was trying to. I thought when I first opened this, I was like, man, the Kings are bringing back like almost everybody. They added DeMar, but I forgot that Harrison Barnes played significant minutes last
yeah.
year.
So did,
yeah, yeah.
So did Davion.
Yeah.
Davion
yeah.
played, I mean, if you're looking mm-hmm. at like percentage of minutes played and stuff.
Yeah.
Like win shares, though, I don't think either one of them were big on win shares. So I think they actually like mm-hmm. probably helps the team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
wins
so.
Above replacement, whatever.
Yeah. Niners had a bunch of stuff go right over the last few days.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, while it's undoubtedly...
Well, one better, glaring thing went wrong over the weekend.
Yeah, yeah right, yeah. yeah.
But went right after that, so shout out Ricky.
I can't believe how many people are trying to spin that as like a... Did you see what the Niners broadcaster
yeah,
said on...
I know he was trying to be charming. That's not charming.
Not at all.
This is...
No.
Like, I get, like, he probably thought it was cute. It's not.
No,
and if the guys are talking like that in the locker room, that's fine. Let that stay in the locker room.
100%.
Don't bring that out to the public. There is nothing like you're glamorizing getting shot. Like, don't come on, bro. Don't do that.
No,
don't do that. Like
not
this could have been
for a rookie would have been to go. There you go.
This could have been terribly, terribly tragic.
Yes,
and
yes.
to pass it off like, oh, he's really gaining some street cred out here. Like, come on,
no.
Tim, don't do that,
dude. He got
that's
he
gross.
He got shot with a gun.
Yeah.
He did not get in a minor scuffle.
Yeah.
No.
Again, if that's happening in the locker room, let it happen in the
sure.
locker room. Don't take it to the radio stations.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't need to make this
Yeah, it's
no.
whack. That's so whack.
It's totally
super
bizarre.
Trash. Trent Williams.
But yes, a lot of things.
Trent Williams back in the facility today, not practicing. My question is if this all happened in time for them to be effective in week one. I'm still deeply concerned about week one with Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams getting 3 and 4 days of practice.
No, I completely understand. I am too, a little bit. Part of what alleviates that is I don't like the Jets. I don't buy it. I don't buy anything anyone says about them. I think they're grossly overrated and overhyped. I'm glad that they had a nice defense last year. That's fine. Keep using that same excuse when I talk about the Jets. Just explain to me how Aaron Rodgers isn't going to get murdered for a second straight year. Did they fix that line? That's my only question. Everybody keeps reciting this nonsense about the Jets defense, and it's not nonsense. They were good. The Jets defense, that's fine. Who's protecting your 40-something-year-old quarterback? Because if you can't answer that for me, I can't help you.
Yep.
He played, what, 3 plays last year? He nearly got murdered on 2 of them, and he popped his ACL on the third one.
His Achilles.
He popped his Achilles on the third one. Okay.
All right.
Then what happened? A variety of quarterbacks got murdered the next 17 games of the season. So yeah. I am absolutely concerned for the San Francisco 49ers, less so just because I'm not completely buying their week one opponent. My thing all along was I like Brandon Ayuk. He's a wide receiver one. I think he is a massive difference maker for this team. I am worried that he's going to start slow. I'm far less worried about Trent Williams starting slow, but I do believe he is the most important player to that San Francisco 49ers offense. And just the fact that he's back and his agency is tweeting that we're getting ready to close the deal, that's a big deal. This isn't Schefter leaking it. This isn't Ian Rappaport it. This isn't sources. This is the agency that represents Trent Williams saying he's on his way back to San Francisco and we're closing out a deal with the San Francisco 49ers. That's a major deal.
No doubt. D'Lo and KC coming up next. What do you guys got?
This. A lot about Trent Williams, San Francisco 49ers, and probably just a lot in the NFL in general. Trista will be with us at 2, Jason Jones in the 3 o'clock hour, so good stuff ahead.
Can't wait. D'Lo and KC coming up next. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders. Back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Until then, drink water, be nice to people. Bye.